All right, we are on the fourth and final talk, and this one's always last because I have to make sure you like me enough so I can actually teach this one. Now, when I share what I'm going to share with you, it is frequent, almost always, somebody in the audience doesn't like what I have to say. That may not be the case here, but I just would, anytime anybody shares anything, of course, we want to always challenge you not to believe anything because I said it, but to examine the scriptures to see if the things that you hear are so. And so even with this particular talk, and this one may be the most controversial, if you will, because I am going to advocate for the use of spanking, physical discipline, and you'll hear that and why and all the rest of it. But some people, some Christians even, have views that don't agree with that. And so, again, I just would ask you to be a student of the Scriptures. I don't believe it's beneficial for me to be argumentative or hostile with anybody, so I don't do that. But I just, this is what I teach, this is what I believe, this is why I believe it from the Scriptures, and then you'll have to decide what you think of that. So I just pray that we would all have a spirit of humility as we talk about these matters. These are challenging. This is a challenging talk in the sense of there can be all kinds of wide varieties of difficulties that everybody faces. And so this is often where the questions come. What do I do when my kid misbehaves like this would be the frequent questions that are often asked. And so that's important questions we want to answer. And so I hope that it's helpful. So let me jump in and begin with our introduction here with this regard. I believe there are two ditches that we want to avoid in this area of discipline, and in particular, in this area of discipline. And the first one, letter A, or the I don't know if it's an A, sorry, let me look really fast. Number one there, never spanking is one ditch to avoid. Never spanking. I believe that violates Proverbs 13:24. He who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is careful to discipline him. As well as Proverbs 22:15, folly is bound up in the heart of the child, but the rod of correction will drive it far from him. So never spanking, I think, is a ditch to avoid, but also, number two, spanking for every sin or offense. That's a violation of Proverbs 29:15, which says, the rod and reproof imparts wisdom, but a child left to himself disgraces his mother. So those are the two ditches to avoid, and we want to avoid those. And so consider that as we move forward. Now, second, Roman numeral number two there, what is the difference between punishment and discipline? I think this is a really important point that I want to help, because before I talk about spanking, I want to, first of all, not forget the whole last talk, keeping the gospel central. So I'm not on a spank fest. I'm not just loving to spank my children. It's simply a tool to help them to hear the gospel. All that to say, we have to distinguish between punishment and discipline. Punishment is payment for past offenses. Punishment is payment for past offenses, and that is not your job. Punishment is payment for past offenses. That is not your job. Who does the punishing in this world? It's God, ultimately. So only God is able to punish. You know, Romans 6:23, for the wages of sin is death. Or you could consider Genesis 19:15. Genesis 19:15, Lot up. Take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be swept away in the punishment of the city. God does the punishing of souls for all eternity. Second, the only other venue for punishment is the government. God provides the government as a means of restraining evildoers. Romans 13, verse 4 in particular. Okay? So punishment is God's job, and it's the job of the government. It is not your job as a parent to ever punish your children. The difference, of course, is there's discipline. Discipline is different because its intended purpose is to motivate future change. So punishment looks back to make you pay. Discipline looks forward to help you in the future. That's the big difference. And child abuse happens when a parent gets angry and looks back to make the child pay for what they've done. That's where child abuse happens. And I don't want anything that I say to communicate or in any way endorse child abuse as wicked and it's evil and it's heinous, and we ought to speak out against it. But the biblical use of the rod is not abusive, despite what our world tells us. And it's actually very, very, very helpful. Hebrews 12:11 reminds us, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. We want our children to be trained by the discipline, and it helps them in the future. Notice even Proverbs 23. Let me read Proverbs 23, verses 13 and 14. Proverbs 23, verses 13 and 14. Notice how it looks forward. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die. If you strike him with the rod, you will save his soul in the future from Sheol. Now, some translations use the word punish instead of strike. And again, I don't think that's a good way to think about it. It's not a good translation in the sense that it's not punishing for the past. It's discipline for looking to the future. And then also the rod of correction is actually a form of striking again with the rod, with the instrument, so to speak. And it's all for future good. Now remember, as we think about corporal punishment, as we think about spanking, spanking doesn't change your child. Spanking doesn't change your child. What changes children? The same thing that changes everybody else, the gospel. And so again, our spanking is not meant to punish for the past. It's meant to open up their ears so that they can hear the gospel. That's what we really want to do. Now, as we move forward, Roman numeral number 3, we want to talk about biblical forms of discipline, and the first one being spanking. Now, in Ted Tripp's definition, I'm just going to, he uses the word punishment again, and I would disagree with that. Physical discipline is how I would define that, so if I can tweak his definition just a little as I read it. The rod is a parent in faith towards God and faithfulness towards his or her children, undertaking the responsibility of careful, timely, measured, and controlled use of physical discipline to underscore the importance of obeying God, thus rescuing the child from continuing in his foolishness until death. That's what we're after. So I think it's an excellent definition. I'm just modifying that one word. Now, in your notes again, next question, why do we spank? The big broad category is foolishness. So the broad category of why we spank is foolishness. I've already mentioned Proverbs 13, 24, whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is careful to discipline him. Proverbs 22, 15, folly is bound up in the heart of the child, but the rod of correction drives it from him. And then we've already quoted those other verses, Proverbs 23, 13 and 14, and Proverbs 29, 15. All of them say foolishness is the reason we spank. Foolishness is the reason, the big broad category. So, as a young father many years ago, when I was reading these principles and thinking through, what specific behaviors am I going to spank my children for? What I did was I started in Proverbs chapter 1, and I read through the book of Proverbs on a Saturday. One Saturday, I read through the whole 31 chapters in one sitting, and all I did was look for all the ways that God described behavior he called foolish. So there's probably a few more, but these are the big ones. These are the ones that stood out. And so I came up with basically three categories, three behaviors that I saw described in the book of Proverbs. And then there's a fourth one I'll mention. It's a slight caveat, but I'll explain that in a moment. But the three main reasons I spank my children, number one is for disobedience. Disobedience, that's Proverbs 1, 7 and 8. Disobedience, or letter A, disobedience. Letter B, lying and deception. Lying or deception. And letter C, venting of anger. So disobedience, lying, venting of anger. Those are the three reasons I spank my children. I've taught my children for many years, if you do one of these three behaviors, you're going to get a spanking. If you don't do one of these three behaviors, you won't get a spanking. And so it's very clear. It's very straightforward. I don't have to wonder. I don't have to contemplate. I don't have to prayerfully consider. I just know these are the reasons you get a spanking. And if you do these things, you're going to get a spanking. Because I can talk myself out of doing hard things sometimes if I give myself that out. And so this was a way for me to be consistent and I think trying to be faithful to the book of Proverbs. So let's look at those three reasons. The first one is disobedience, Proverbs 1, 7 and 8. Proverbs 1, 7 and 8 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, forsake not your mother's teaching." Hear, my son, your father's instruction, forsake not your mother's teaching. When a child doesn't listen to his father's instruction and forsakes his mother's teaching, forsakes what she has to say to him, that is disobedience. That is foolishness, according to the Bible. And Ted Tripp, in his book, Shepherding a Child's Heart, defines obedience this way. Obedience is doing what you're told without challenge, without excuse, and without delay. Obedience is doing what you're told without challenge, without excuse, and without delay. Anything else is disobedience. Psalm 119, verse 60 says, "I will hasten and not delay to obey your commands." And so if a child is disobedient, I would encourage you to spank them every time. Now, I say this in counseling all the time, and they look at me usually because it's you're engaging somebody in it's a little much closer, intimate. They jaw drops, the eyes get really wide, and I know I can read their mind. This is the first time, this is the only time I can read people's minds. If I did what you're saying, I'll never stop spanking my children. That's what they think every time. Okay? And then I have to tell them, listen, you're probably right for about 2 weeks, and then it'll get better. So I'd encourage you to consider, this is very, very important. This is back to the first time obedience from the first parenting talk. It's vitally important. And the reason is because we can train our children to obey the first time you speak. And the counting and the delays and the asking multiple times, all of that leads to a child growing in disobedience and rebellion. And when children, little kids, don't listen to their parents, guess what? It doesn't get better when they're 14 or 15 or 16. It gets much, much worse. And so I want to challenge you to consider this act of disobedience as vital, because who are they ultimately disobeying? They're ultimately disobeying God, because God says to children, "Children, obey your parents and the Lord, for this is right." And when you disobey, you're disobeying God. And when you disobey God and nothing happens, that's a problem. Their conscience is being dulled to disobeying God. And I would encourage you not to let that happen. The second reason we spank our children, lying and deception, Proverbs 14:8 says, "The wisdom of the prudent is to discern his way, but the folly of fools is deceiving." Excuse me. "The wisdom of the prudent is to discern his way, but the folly of fools is deceiving." So deception is a form of foolishness. So when my children lie, I believe they need a spanking. Now, it's very important that we not make a mistake here. We have to be 100% certain they lied. If you're 99% certain, do not spank them, because you can exasperate your children. That would be you violating Ephesians 6:4. Fathers or parents, do not exasperate your children, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So if you're not 100% certain, do not spank them. But if you are 100% certain, then I would encourage you to spank them for lying. And then the third reason is venting of anger, Proverbs 14:29. Proverbs 14:29 says, "Whoever is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who has a hasty temper exalts folly." A hasty temper exalts folly. For those of you with young children, I want to plead with you, temper tantrums are a violation of this. That's what temper tantrums are. They're venting their anger. I would encourage you to spank your children for temper tantrums. In my story that I made up, which wasn't that made up because it happened numerous times, but my daughter Grace would get a spanking for punching her sister. That's venting your anger. If somebody throws something against the wall on purpose because they're really angry, you know, breaking a glass or something violent like that, that's venting anger. I would spank a child for that. So this idea of disobedience, lying, and venting of anger, those are the themes, those are the acts of foolishness that are predominant in the book of Proverbs describing foolish behavior. Now, the last one, the fourth one for your notes, let me just turn to Proverbs 26:11. And this one I'm a little more tentative on because I'm not sure I'm right, but this is my best understanding, and I say this every time I teach this, and nobody's come to correct me and give me a better explanation, so it must be at least a reasonable explanation. But Proverbs 26:11 says this, "Like a dog that returns to his vomit is a fool who repeats his folly." Okay? Like a dog that returns to his vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. And so what the way I process through this in my early days of parenting is I decided to do it this way. What that means to me is when a child does a certain behavior that is not preferred but is not a spankable offense, but then I keep speaking to them about it and they don't listen to me, they tune me out, they don't hear my words, I transition that to become a spankable offense. So here's a perfect example. If my child leaves his socks on the floor one day, should I go in there and spank him? Of course not. That would be rather silly. He leaves his socks on the floor, and we'll just say, I go into the room and say, hey, don't leave your socks on the floor. Okay, and they put it in the laundry. And the next day I come in there, I see the socks on the floor again. Hey, come on, don't leave your socks on the floor. A third day, a fourth day maybe comes around. 4 days in a row, they're not listening to me. They're not heeding my warning. They're not taking heed to what I'm saying. I'm going to now transition and say, okay, for a little while now, if you leave your socks on the floor, I'm going to consider that a spankable offense because I'm specifically telling you not to do this specific behavior, and you keep going back to it again and again and again. So that's how that's the fourth reason. So it's rare. It doesn't happen very often. But that's how I use that particular verse, trying to address behaviors that didn't necessarily fall into the category of a disobedience, lying, and venting of anger. So why do I spank? Foolishness. When do I spank? For these three primary reasons. Now, how do I spank? Okay? How do I spank? I'm going to give you some suggestions. Now, this is common grace. I wouldn't say I can point to a Bible verse to tell you have to do it this way, but I'm going to give you some recommendations that I believe are based in wisdom. The first comment I would make is the certainty of a spanking is more important than the severity. The certainty of a spanking is more important than the severity. In other words, your consistency is absolutely critical. That's why I believe it's important to adopt, whether you agree with my three or not, if you have whatever your principles are, your children ought to know, they ought never be shocked that they're getting a spanking. Never. That should never happen. You are not doing your job if they're shocked that they got a spanking. They should know exactly what the parameters are, when they would get a spanking, and then you should deliver consistently. Because think about how frustrating it is if one day they do this certain behavior and they're fine and you laugh and you chuckle and think it's funny, and then the next day you spank them for the same behavior. That's a problem. That's a serious problem. And so I don't want to have any wiggle room there. I want to be consistent. I want to be faithful. I want my kids to know what to expect. I want to be predictable. Good parents are predictable. The certainty is more important than the severity. The second thing I would say is I would encourage you to consider using a breadboard or something like that. Some people use their hand, which I'll talk about in a moment, which I don't agree with, I wouldn't do. But other people use like a wooden spoon or a spatula. I think a spatula is not hard enough, and a wooden spoon is too small because it centralizes the spot of being struck where they get hit. And it's just a little spot, and it's very easy for it not to be very painful, honestly, but also it can bruise easier because you're in one little spot. A breadboard is wider, so I have a breadboard that's about this big, and it's got a handle. So if you've been to Texas Roadhouse, they have the breadboard with the little handle. Something like that is probably the thing I'd recommend. The word rod in the book of Proverbs is basically a piece of wood fashioned for a purpose. That's the definition of the word rod in Hebrew. And so it's a piece of wood fashioned for a purpose. And so we're fashioning something like a piece of wood for a purpose to spank our children with. And so when we do this, it's very important that we consider, one other thing about the hand. I wouldn't use your hand for a couple of reasons. Number one, once they get past like two or three, it's not going to hurt very much. It's much harder to have it hurt, and you'll have to pull their pants down to make it sting. And if you pull a kid's pants down and you swat them on their bare bottom, you're going to leave a handprint. In the United States of America, it is legal in all 50 states to this day to spank your children. It is illegal, I believe, in all 50 states to mark your child. If you put a handprint on your child, you can be arrested, and there's no need for it. It's unnecessary. So that's a practical reason of why not to do that. Second of all, I think it's from the Bible, the idea of a rod is intended to be a piece of wood for a purpose. And so we use an instrument because I believe that's what the Bible commends. And then as they get older, it's much harder for it to sting because it has to be painful for it to be effective. And your hand gets hurt. If you swing really hard and your hand gets hurt, then it's harder to do. And so for those reasons, I would argue something like a breadboard is a wise thing to do. When your child is little, then I would encourage you to sit in a chair and lay them across your lap. And then you can have them lay across your lap. And I would always start with two swats. Remember, the certainty is more important than the severity. So I would start with two swats. And then if they fight you and they're wiggling and doing stuff like this, you would say to them something like this. If you don't stop moving, you're going to get three swats. Do you want two swats or do you want three swats? And usually after you've followed through once or twice, they don't like three swats. They don't like two, but they like two more than three. And so they usually quit moving for you. And that's why I do that. I never want to do one because I might swat and it might not hurt. And so then I kind of lost my opportunity. So I always do two and then I go up to three, but I never do more than three. I don't just keep swinging because I'm angry. I start with two. I use three as a deterrent so they don't keep fighting me. Now, perhaps one of the most important things I want to tell you about when you spank is listening to this verse. It's Proverbs 18:19. It's just said a little more clearly in the NIV and most of these other verses. I'm reading from the ESV, but the NIV says it really well, so I want to use NIV here. And it says, An offended brother is more unyielding than a fortified city. An offended brother is more unyielding than a fortified city. If you offend your child with your anger when you're spanking them, you will lose the impact of the discipline. If you offend your child with your anger, you won't reach them. They will build up a wall to their heart and block you out, and you can't get through because you've offended them with your anger. This is not a time to be angry when you're spanking your child, because again, that's child abuse. And so if you think about getting angry, there's two dead giveaways that you're angry and should pause before you follow through with your discipline. The two dead giveaways are you're talking fast and you're talking loud. If you're talking fast or talking loud, you need to calm down before you issue any discipline. If you're talking fast or you're talking loud, you need to wait. So if they're young, we lay them across our lap. We deliver two swats. If they're older, I would have them stand up once they get to be about 7 or 8 maybe, something like that, whatever. Their height is more important than their age, honestly. If they can't lay across your lap, then I would have them stand like against a wall like this or a dresser or anything like that. They put their hands here and they just stand like this, and then you can deliver your two swats that way. Okay, if they start looking back, no, you're going to get two swats. If you keep looking back, you're going to get three because you don't want them to move because you want to make sure you hit them in the bottom and not in the hand or somewhere else, okay? And we want their hands up against the wall or on something so they don't have time to get their hands in here and get hit because you don't want to break their finger or something like that. And so you want to be able to have their hands on something so they're not going to get their hands in the way because we're not trying to hit their hand, we're trying to hit their bottom. And so we've got this issue here. We've got a breadboard, something like it. We're going to do two swats. We're going to swat them, and then it ought to hurt. You need to gauge if it hurts, okay? It needs to provide some sting. We're not trying to crush them. So with a little kid, a little tap is fine when they're two, for example. But a little tap is fine. But as they get older, you're going to have to swing a little harder. When my boys got to be around 8 or 9, I had to instruct my wife because I started to hear little whispers that it wasn't hurting anymore. They preferred when mom spanked. And as soon as you hear that your mom needs to swing a little harder. So I said to my wife, honey, with my boys, just your boys, you need to swing as hard as you possibly can. Do you understand me? Okay. Just for the boys, right? And they needed that because they were older and they were a little firmer and they were a little more stubborn and a little harder to impress. And so with them, we did that because you wanted to have some measure of sting to get their attention, okay? Now, in getting their attention, after they cry, typically they'll cry, I want to comfort them. I want to be encouraging. I want to remind them of some things. I want to remind them that I love them. Why did I do this? Because I love them. That's what Proverbs 13:24 says. He who spares the rod hates his son. The world tries to tell you it's hateful and sinful to spank your children, and that is exactly the opposite of what the Bible says. When parents don't spank their children, they're not loving them well. And I would argue that spanking children biblically is absolutely, without question, the best remedy for child abuse. Because what happens in homes where abuse happens is a child does something wrong and the parent gets agitated and doesn't do anything about it. Child continues, parent gets madder and doesn't do anything about it. Child keeps continuing, and parent gets really mad, maybe starts yelling and screaming. The child doesn't change, and so then the parent hauls off and starts hitting the child. And all of that would have been circumvented if the first time the child disobeyed, you delivered a spanking, and everything was calmed down, and it was over. But when you don't deal with stuff, it grows, it gets bigger, the problem gets severe, and then somebody loses their temper. And if they're really big and a child is really little, that's when child abuse happens. So spanking is the best remedy for child abuse, because if you do it biblically, you will never abuse your child. So after you've spanked them a couple of swats and they cry, you want to hug them, you want to love on them, you want to encourage them, remind them of your great love for them. And then typically I would spank a child first, and then I would have honestly transition to the last talk. Then I would start going through what happened. I would ask them, what happened? Why did you disobey? Whatever the situation, what were you thinking and feeling, etc. And go through and provide a gospel presentation. So when I'm spanking my children, it's not whack whack and go back to your room. It's a whole conversation. It's sharing the gospel. It's walking through this with them in love. It's being tender. It's being patient. It's helping them to consider. This is a 5 to 10 minute process. This is not just whack whack and I'm done. Right? Because the rod and reproof imparts wisdom. So just spanking them doesn't do anything if you don't follow it up with a conversation. You want to spank them to get their attention and then fill them with truth to help them with whatever just happened. Why did they do that? And then one other comment I'll make is don't forget about grace. Don't forget about grace. What I mean by that is one of the things that I'll do is with my children who know disobedience, lying, venting of anger, that's why you get a spanking. Every once in a while with a child, I'll pull them into the bathroom, I'll have my paddle, I'll go through the emotions, I'll have the conversation, I'll have everything going through like we normally do, and then I'll have them stand or sit or whatever, and I'm ready to spank them, and then I'll stop and I'll put the paddle down and I'll say, now listen, right now you deserve a spanking, but I'm going to give you grace today. I'm going to give you a hug instead, okay? Now I want you to see, this is just a tiny, tiny, I know it's tiny, but it's a little taste of what God does. We deserve punishment in hell forever because of our sin, and he gives us heaven. We get to walk with God forever, and I want you to see in a small little way, because honestly, not getting a spanking is a big deal to a little kid. And so I'm going to give you a little taste of grace. It's unmerited favor. You deserve a spanking. I'm going to give you a hug. So I'll do that, and then one other way I want to emphasize grace is when you're making a transition in your parenting. So typically the people I work with have not been doing anything close to this, and when I teach these principles, I'll tell them, now listen, don't go home and jump 0 to 60 first day, because your kids are going to have a really hard time with that. So I'm going to encourage you to give your kids a week of grace. A week of grace. What I mean by that is every time your child disobeys, they get one warning, and then they're given that same instruction again. So say, for example, you say to your child, honey, I want you to go put your toys away. But mom, we're still playing. Is that obedience? The answer is no. They disobeyed you by doing that. So right now, they deserve a spanking. So you would say something like this in the week of grace. Honey, I asked you to put your toys away, and you did not obey. Therefore, you deserve a spanking. But this is the week of grace. I'm going to give you one warning, and I'm going to ask you again in just a moment to put these toys away. And if you disobey me again, you're going to get a spanking. So please obey me. Are you ready? Please put your toys away. And if they disobey you again, now they get a spanking. But they were given a warning. And say, for example, 5 minutes later, you ask them to do something else, and they disobey you again. You would say, right now, you deserve a spanking, but this is the week of grace. I'm going to give you one warning, and then I'm going to give you that instruction again in just a moment. If you disobey me again, you're going to get another spanking. However, if you don't do that and you actually obey me, you won't get a spanking. Please do that other task. So this would go on for a whole week. Every single time they deserve a spanking, they would get one warning every single time. Even if it's 3 minutes apart, it doesn't matter. It's always a new incident, so therefore they get one warning. Once the week of grace is over, you want to remind all your children on the morning of that day, hey, the week of grace is over. When I speak, the first time I expect you to obey, and you'll get a spanking going forward without warnings anymore. If you will do that, I think that transitions and helps a lot, because it helps you to be consistent what your new expectations are, and then it also helps the child get used to the new expectations, because we don't want to exasperate them. We want to help them to get used to the new transition, the new change, if you will. All right, so that is spanking. If you email me, I have my business card is out there if you want to just take down the email address. I have a one-page document that I created that basically just puts it all on one page, and it kind of reminds you of all the main teachings that I just covered there for you. So if you would like that document, I'm happy to send it to you. If you just email me and ask me for it, I will send it to you with no problem, okay? All right, with that said, let's move on from spanking. Now let's talk about cause and effect. So spanking is a really important part of discipline, but it's not the only part. Cause and effect is really important. Children must be allowed to reap what they sow. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever one sows, he will also reap. That's Galatians 6:7. In other words, we want to allow natural consequences to be a good teaching tool wherever possible. And then in using consequences, we want to be careful not to exasperate our children by making them too long. So let me back up and just review that second one there. Allowing natural consequences is a great teaching tool. So in other words, if you have an older, just the easiest one I can think of, you have a child who has a job and they decide they quit their job because they don't like their boss. And they quit their job before they get another job, which is not a good idea. You can't do that if you're running a household and because you need money to stay in your house, and so you would have to typically, unless you had a bunch of savings, you would have to wait to get another job. And so say, for example, this child quits his job and now has no money, and then they want to go hang out with their friends on Friday night, but they have no gas in their car. Do not give them the money to fill their gas tank, because they need to suffer the natural consequences. When you quit your job and have no money, you can't go places. That's how you have to live. And so don't help them avoid the natural consequences of their choices. Also, you want to connect your consequences to the actual behavior. So one thing that parents often do that I believe is a big mistake is if the child does something wrong, like they're late for school, they don't wake up in the morning, the parents know that the child loves to go out and hang out with their friends on Friday night, so they'll ground them for a week. It has nothing to do with being late for school. Now, what does have to be late for school? How about an early bedtime? You have to go to bed earlier because you were late for school. That's a natural consequence. That fits together. It's not punitive. It's meant to be corrective. We don't issue discipline to make them pay for irritating us. We're trying to use discipline or consequences, if you will, to help them in the future. Grounding them for a night is not going to help them wake up in the morning. It doesn't fit. It's not connected. Taking their phone, that's what parents love to do. Take their phone, take their radio, take their music, take their TV, whatever it is that they want to take. They take and take and take, and I would argue that's not very effective. What we want to do is use a consequence that is directly connected to the misbehavior, and it's short to get their attention so that we can then teach them something, talk to them about why that was a problem, and then restore their privileges. Because if you ground a teenager, for example, for a month, that's an eternity for a teenager. And if they're grounded for a month, guess what? They're going to be mad at for a month? You. Now, we could wish that were not so, but it is. 100 kids out of 100 are going to be mad at their parents for a month, and they're not going to think about their sin. They're going to think about your sin of exasperating them for disciplining them for so long. I would encourage you, if somebody does something wrong, maybe late coming home from an event, and you want to have them stay home because they were not obeying your curfew, have them miss one event, one night, just one time. That's enough. Get their attention and talk to them about the importance of being responsible and being reliable, et cetera, et cetera. And so just the idea then of natural consequences ought to be connected to the behavior, and it ought to be shortened to the point, because we don't want relational distance to grow. We want to win the hearts of our kids. We want to stay in close fellowship with our kids. And if we, in a sense, banish them for a month, our relationship is going to suffer for a month. That's what's so beautiful about a spanking. When they're little, it's over. As soon as it's over, this is a 5 or 10 minute process, and then the behavior, it's over. The past misbehavior is done for. We're not talking about it anymore. We're leaving it alone, and we're rejoicing in our fellowship and our relationship, and our friendship can be restored in the home. And so it's not an adversarial posture. And when we have lengthy consequences, it usually develops an adversarial posture with our kids. All right, moving on. Mandated self-examination. I'm sorry, let me back up and say one more comment. I apologize. One more comment. In my home, so you're going to have to decide what you think of this. In my home, we were very, very diligent to spank our children when they were young. And once they no longer get spankings, and I'm choosing my words carefully, we almost never issue consequences anymore. I said almost never. I didn't say never. I said almost never. Because as they get older, We want to move toward influencing our children more and more and using our authority less and less. And so I want to try to influence them. And if my children obey me, if they have learned to submit themselves to my authority, there's very rarely do I need to use any consequences. I can just have a conversation with them and reason with them and explain to them why that was a bad idea. Don't do that again. And I don't have to transition right to consequences for every single misbehavior. But that's why spanking is so important when they're young, because when we get to them to an older age, we don't have to discipline for every wrong behavior. All right, let me move on now. Mandated self-examination. And feel free to ask questions. That'd be good questions to ask around that if you have questions about what I just shared. Next, letter C, mandated self-examination. Mandated self-examination. This is basically trying to redeem a timeout. I think a timeout is, I don't want to be too rude, but I think it's useless and unhelpful. Okay? When you send a little child who does not have the capacity to biblically live, send them off by themselves with no help and no support and just banish them, even if it's for 5 minutes, I don't see anything productive that's going to happen in that 5 minutes. Nothing productive is going to happen. However, mandated self-examination is the idea here of if a child has done something wrong, we want to help them to think about their behavior. We want to help them consider, you know, if they're being selfish with one of their siblings. Hey, I want you to go to your room, and I'd like you to sit down, open up your Bible, and I'd like you to read Philippians 2, 3, and 4, and I'd like you to think about that just for a couple minutes, and I'm going to come in and talk to you in just a couple minutes, and I'd like you to tell me, what are your thoughts about what just happened related to Philippians 2, 3, and 4? How could Philippians 2, 3, and 4 have helped you to respond differently in that situation you just had with your sister? And then give them that couple minutes, they think about it, you come in, and now you can have a conversation about what does it look like to flesh out and live out Philippians 2, 3, and 4. I think that's a far better use of time than just giving them a timeout, and then they come out of the room like nothing happened, because no instruction has happened, and so mandated self-examination. The other thing that we found helpful with some parent recommended this to us, and we had one child in particular. We had a daughter, our daughter Grace, actually, when she was a little baby. At 3 months of age, she had actually had open heart surgery. She had a heart defect. She's doing great now. Her health is fine. Not an issue anymore, but it was a big trial for a season. And she was delayed in a lot of ways, behaviorally and emotionally and all the rest of it. And so she would have trouble with her emotions. And so one of the things that we started to do with her was we said to her, show me self-control. And so we taught her, show me self-control means you got to sit down and you got to fold your hands and then be silent. And then I would give her a few seconds to calm down, and then I would start to talk to her. But show me self-control was very effective. It was quite remarkable, actually. I was kind of shocked when somebody suggested it, and I tried it. It was very helpful for this one particular daughter. Show me self-control. Sit down, fold your hands, and be quiet. And then we would engage in a conversation trying to help her with whatever she was upset about. All right, and then a final reminder on the issue of discipline. Love a lot, praise a lot, play a lot, pray a lot, teach a lot, correct using cause and effect, and when you spank, do it lovingly, slowly, prayerfully, and thoroughly so you don't have to do it often. All right, in the last few minutes here, authority versus influence. If you want to draw a big L, just draw a big L on your paper. Draw a big L, a large L, and then inside the large L, draw yourself an X that fits in the large L. So you got an L, and then you have an X, okay? At the bottom, underneath the bottom line of the L, you want to put a 0 in the bottom left, and you want to put an 18 at the bottom right. 0, 18. Bottom left is 0, bottom right is 18. Up in the top left is the word authority. Top left is authority. And then the top right is influence. Top right is influence. So the idea there is, as your kids get older, you're using less and less authority, and you're using more and more influence. If I could summarize the problem with the vast majority of the counseling I do, in addition to the not spanking when they were young, but the other issue is basically parents treat 15 and 16-year-olds like they're 7 still. And when parents do that, children are exasperated beyond measure, and they will rebel, I promise you. You cannot treat a 15-year-old like a 7-year-old. You cannot do that. And if you do, they will rebel. And so you have to understand what's happening. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he won't depart from it. We're supposed to train our kids up to leave us. We're not supposed to keep them under our thumb until they leave the house. So when they're 15, you should be teaching them how to make decisions. You should be helping them make decisions independent of you. You should be helping them think about wise choices and choosing friends, not choosing all their friends for them, but helping them figure out what does a wise friend look like? What does a good friend look like? You're helping them to think. You're not just telling them what to think all the time. We must help our children to do that. And then finally, running out of time here. Finally, we want to talk about the prodigal father as a model, number five, Roman numeral number five, the prodigal father as a model. So we should know, Adam and Eve were children to God, basically, when they were in the Garden of Eden. God was the perfect father, and they still sinned. They still rebelled. You cannot prevent your children from sinning or rebelling. You cannot prevent your children from sinning or rebelling. We don't have that much power. That's why we have to be influencers. And the idea of the prodigal father, just think of that story. It's in Luke 15, if you're not familiar with it. The prodigal son rebels against father and says, I want my inheritance now. I'm going to treat you like you're dead. I want you to give me the money that's going to be mine, and I'm going to go off and waste it in wild living. And he does. And then he's suffering the consequences of his actions. Notice the father doesn't come and rescue him and put him up in a hotel and tell him, I got you covered, don't worry. He lets him suffer the consequences. And while he's suffering the consequences and he's in misery, he remembers the kindness of his father to the hired servants. And so he goes back to that father. So the idea I want you to hold on to is, if our children rebel, we want them to know where kindness is found, so that if they come to their senses, they'll come back to you. If your child rebels and they come to their senses, we want them to know where kindness is found, and it's you, so that they come back to you. You are to be a place of kindness, so they'll come back to you. That's the message of the prodigal father as model. May they see our kindness. Don't let their misbehavior cause you to be angry and hostile. But instead, overcome evil with good. Romans 12:17-21 is a good reference. We don't have time to read it, but Romans 12:17-21 gives us a picture of what it looks like to overcome evil with good. If they're rebelling, we are to be kind, and then we can pray. And God is at work in powerful prayers. We can pray powerfully for our children that they would come back and follow after the Lord who is worthy to be followed. Now, really quickly, last thing, really fast, I don't want to forget to say this. In conclusion, I just want to give you three reasons why spanking is ineffective. Three reasons why spanking is ineffective. I'll go through them real quickly. Three reasons spanking is ineffective. I get that all the time. I tried spanking and it doesn't work. And then I ask a few questions and one of these three reasons is the answer every time. Okay? Number one, it's inconsistent. Ephesians 6:4 reminds us, don't exasperate your children. It's inconsistent. That's the first reason it's not effective. Number two, it doesn't hurt. Hebrews 12:11 says, godly discipline is painful, doesn't hurt. That's the second reason. And then the third reason is it's done in anger. Proverbs 18:19. Inconsistent, doesn't hurt, or done in anger, that will negate the powerful tool that God has given you. But if you'll use it consistently in a way that does provide some measure of sting that's not beyond measure and inappropriate, and it's not done in anger, you will find it's very, very effective. Now, when I say effective, it doesn't mean your children are wonderful. It doesn't save your children, but it does mean you should be able to have your children under control where you're able to function, and when you tell them to do things, they obey. And that typically takes a season, but if you'll hang in there and be persistent,